You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The explosive growth of the web, social media, and smartphones has digitized most people's lives on a remarkable scale. It's also created new opportunities for industries to access an unprecedented amount of data about us. Financial Times technology correspondent April Demboski has covered the rise of big data and, with several other reporters, created a new series in the Financial Times about what companies are doing with all this money. She joins us now from San Francisco. Welcome to our show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, we're throwing around this term big data. What exactly is it?
Big data refers to, in some senses, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's big. It's just masses and masses and masses of data. The treasure trove of data, particularly from the internet, has grown exponentially the more that people have interacted with email and social media sites and YouTube. And so what we're talking about, especially in comparison to the kind of data that industries were working with before, in the past, we had largely structured data. So taking the healthcare industry as an example, lots and lots of numbers that measured cholesterol tests and heart rate. And what we have today is what people refer to as unstructured data, which means it's fragments or words or language, things from, scrawled doctor's notes that, one doctor uses one term, another uses a different term, or from social media sites, people typing in, posts and slang. And so it's very difficult to categorize that kind of data into one particular format. And that's what people refer to as unstructured data. And
to be put into structured form sometime in the future? Or is it just sitting there?
That's exactly what data scientists are trying to figure out now. So one example is Watson, the IBM computer that competed against the Jeopardy champions, is analyzing that kind of unstructured data and trying to find ways to group it together so that it can be searched in a database and that you can actually draw insights out of that.
Now, aren't there two kinds of big data, one that tells companies about overall trends and one which tells them about you and me?
Exactly. There are two different things that companies are looking for. So on the one hand, you've got lots of little tiny pieces of disparate data, say, the fact that you visited Amazon and then from there went to a travel site. That's a tiny little piece of data, but put together, with thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of consumers who are using the web can demonstrate patterns that can be helpful to a company to understand, how people browse on the web, where they come from, and then that can then lead to insights about how to advertise to people or how to actually price a product that you may be shopping for.
So go ahead.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you've got, you can drill down from those, broader patterns that show us patterns across a population down into an individual's habits. And again, taking healthcare as an example, there's a big push for personalization, and it's across healthcare, retail, advertising. It's about figuring out you, the individual, what you're interested in. Are you married? Are you single? Where do you live? And how to deliver the right ad to you at the right time, or figuring out what kinds of fitness patterns you may have or what your diet may be, and then being able to actually target and personalize some kind of health plan for you.
Now, how much data about my life and my habits might be out there for companies to chew over right now? Could they be things that my closest friends and family might not know about?
It could be things that you yourself don't even know about. And that's what's interesting about big data, is that the kinds of trends and patterns that it can reveal just aren't necessarily what you would think of offhand or what would come to mind immediately about you. And that's, I mean, that's true in a lot of realms, that oftentimes also what people are inclined to report about themselves doesn't always line up with the reality. So you may say you visit particular sites, but the computer actually tracks and they know exactly which sites you went to and for how long.
Because they can also put cookies on our computers?
Exactly. It's a very, very simple technology, and most sites do it, and most sites require you to opt out of it, meaning that they're automatically tracking your patterns and your habits until you actually, you know, go through a series of menus on your computer and turn it off.
So if I were one of those people who compulsively erases cookies after every time he sat at his computer, I would be less of a contributor to big data?
You'd be less of a contributor. There's skepticism about exactly how much you can truly clear your digital trail, as they call it.
But there are some scary things in the offing. One article in your series by Emily Steele opens with a futuristic vision of a married couple who are arguing in their living room, and their television, which is playing in that room, listens to their conversation, intuits that they're having a fight. It then selects an ad about a local marriage therapist for the next commercial break. And I thought, well, that sounds a bit wild. And then I realized that Verizon actually patented that idea last month.
Precisely. Yeah. That's not quite where we are today, but the technology exists to make that possible. And one of the big questions is exactly how much are people willing to tolerate? You know, we have privacy debates that arise all over the place. I think social media is one of the biggest culprits right now that is testing people's sense of privacy. And what we're going to see over time, and what social media sites have seen over time, is that people's reactions tend to become subdued over time. We get used to it. We begin to tolerate more of these invasions of our privacy. So it's possible that at some point in the future that becomes the norm.
Because some people post some pretty private stuff on Facebook. They obviously don't have all of that much of a concern about maintaining their privacy, even though they might think they do.
People don't, when you're on Facebook, in a lot of ways it really does feel like you're hanging out with your friends, and people really forget that there's this enormous system, computer system, algorithms, machines that are effectively listening in on your conversation. Number of research studies have found that people are much more willing to talk on social media about their health conditions than they're willing to tell their own doctor.
So have we caught up with Orwell, the 28 years after 1984?
Sometimes it feels like that.
I often see ads that are allegedly tailored to me when I'm browsing the internet, but sometimes they seem to be a little off. Are there still bugs to be worked out?
There are plenty of bugs to work out. In some senses, people have been working with big data for decades. The retail industry has been tracking your purchases from your, you know, the loyalty cards you use at the supermarket for years. In another respect, big data is truly in its infancy, and there are so many things, you know, that data scientists haven't figured out. The other piece to keep in mind about this is that while machines are doing a lot of the heavy lifting here, you still have humans who are operating these machines and who are programming the algorithms. And so it's a fine art, the practice of data science. People refer to it as a mix of hard knowledge and art. And you have to be able to ask the right questions of the data to be able to get the kind of insights you want, or to be able to produce the kinds of results that are truly going to be effective.
So is this all put into a file about me with lots of information from many different platforms that sync up, including my name, pictures of me, or am I just a collection of numbers to them?
Well, most of the companies will say that that the data that they have about you doesn't necessarily have your name attached to it, but you are you are in effect a number. You are, you know, someone, there is a profile of you, and a number of different companies are building their own profiles of you. But they do claim that it can't necessarily trace you back.
My guest is April Demboski, a tech correspondent at Financial Times. That newspaper ran a series on big data all this week. It's available, by the way, on our show page at WNYC.org. You mentioned rewards cards. Isn't big data accessible from a number of different things, including not just the web, smartphones, tablet applications? Have mobile devices added a whole new layer of data about us for companies to analyze?
An enormous layer. Part of what's really fascinating about smartphones in particular is GPS location. It knows exactly where you are when you're, you know, looking for an Indian restaurant, or it knows, you know, exactly where you are when you're posting something on Facebook and complaining about the weather. And all of those things are tiny little data points that can be put together. And one of the biggest hopes is from the advertising industry that, you know, you can deliver, if you are doing a Google search for an Indian restaurant and you are in Brooklyn, they can deliver an ad to you specifically for Indian restaurants that are, you know, within half a mile of where you are at that moment.
And there's an app called Around Me. If they look into that, they'll notice that I'm often looking for a place to get coffee. One of your colleagues wrote about Euclid Analytics, which sells Wi-Fi sniffing sensors that let retailers track the behavior patterns of customers with smartphones in their stores. Couldn't this kind of data just be collected by looking at security camera footage?
It could, and actually there's technology that's even looking into, you know, combining the data, say, from your Facebook page with a camera and being able to, you know, recognize you when you walk into a store and know, you know, that you're even in there. The other thing, though, about smartphones is that you interact with them. And so it just provides a whole other level of what you're interested in, what you're looking for.
So they really have been collecting all of this stuff about me, but should I be worried about it? I don't feel like I'm being bombarded with information that is based on things that have been collected.
There are two camps on this. The proponents of big data and the technology companies out in Silicon Valley all argue that this kind of data collection is all in service of providing better service to you. It's delivering ads for products that you actually care about rather than ones that are irrelevant. It's about offering you discounts on things that you're actually, you know, willing to buy. And so it's all about, you know, personalization and convenience. There's a flip side, of course. You know, privacy advocates are very concerned about what could potentially happen, how this data could potentially be used if it either gets into the wrong hands or if things just advance to a point. So some of the concerns are, you know, if I post so regularly on Facebook what I'm eating, if I'm going out to parties or exercising or not, will that eventually, you know, be scraped by health insurance companies to decide, you know, how much to charge me for a healthcare premium or to possibly, you know, deny me coverage? There's also concerns that this is happening now, that kind of information can be used in court, you know, could be used against you. So,
as we've seen with Twitter recently, where somebody had to plead guilty because one of the things he had tweeted revealed that the prosecution was making a claim that was accurate about him. On the other hand, he felt that Twitter should have been his tweets should have been private.
This is very controversial right now. It's very controversial right now. And even, you know, for a company like Facebook, for example, where you are able to set controls about who can see, you know, what you post on Facebook, it's very easy if you have your privacy settings to friends of friends. then the way that the social graph unravels, it's very easy for, say, a private investigator to gain access to your account from, you know, a friend of a friend. And so while Facebook may have, the company may not have willingly turned over that kind of information, there are ways to get it.
I'm talking with Financial Times technology correspondent April Dymbosky, who's covered the rise of big data and with several other reporters created a series that ran this week in the Financial Times about what companies are doing with all that information. You can find it, link to it on our show page at WNYC.org. We'll continue this conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with April Dymbosky, who's a tech correspondent at Financial Times. We're talking about the series that ran in that newspaper about big data all this week, available on our show page at WNYC.org. A listener has written in wondering if cable companies monitor our watching habits through the cable boxes.
That I'm not sure about. Again, I know the technology exists, but I'm not sure if they're actually doing it right now.
Eric Schmidt, the former CEO of Google, said in 2010 that about 5 exabytes of data, or the equivalent of 250,000 years of DVD quality video, were created in the world every 2 days. How could companies possibly process all that information?
That's part of what big data is all about. It's about, first of all, how to store it, and that's one of the things that has become possible in more recent years, that the ability to store that data and the expense of storing, the ability to store that data has gone up, while the cost of storing it has really gone down.
So, and where is it being stored?
It's being stored in, you know, it's being stored all over the place. You know, so for example, you know, 20 years ago, to store enough data that would be the equivalent of, say, 260 music tracks would be in a machine basically weighing about 500 pounds, the size of a refrigerator. And today we carry that same amount of data on our smartphones. So it's really, you know, the size has really gone down. And so that's what makes companies able to store more and more of this data.
So it's just in some warehouse somewhere? And then, then, if I were a company that was interested in getting information about somebody or some trend, I would go to the company that's storing it and say, and ask them or pay them for the information.
Well, there are some companies that are in the business of brokering data, so they'll. You know, companies like Nielsen and Axiom have been collecting these kinds of data about consumers, and there are, you know, ways to purchase that data or partner with those companies in order to use that data. One of the open questions for companies like Google and Facebook, for them, the data is their competitive advantage. They don't want to share that with anyone, and of course, there would just be enormous controversy over, you know, what. There, if they do actually, you know, start selling that information or making money off of that information indirectly, Facebook does. That's its advertising business is built very much on the unique data that it has collected. But if it were to start, you know, peddling it elsewhere, it would just raise a lot of concern.
I've heard there's a shortage of big data analysts. So
Absolutely. Is
that protecting me a little bit?
Well, the kinds of skills that are required to analyze this data is, it's a very unique combination of skills. So you've got the people who do this need to have a collection of both statistics as well as software engineering. And even within computer science, those tend to be quite different mindsets that you have to operate from. I had one data scientist out here who explained to me, you know, a statistician has to be constantly pessimistic, constantly questioning, what is this data? Can I really draw that kind of conclusion from this data? while the software engineer who is, you know, building the algorithms and asking the question is an eternal optimist and believes that anything can be done with computers. So you've got that kind of conflict even just internally for the person. There's another element to this, though, and that is, you know, being able to kind of see big picture business questions and to ask the appropriate questions. So you have almost a cultural divide between the, you know, super geeky computer scientist guys who are dealing with the data and, you know, the business side of the company who, you know, wants to know how to improve revenues and how to improve sales. And sometimes those two parties talking to each other, you know, the conversation can really break down. And so a data scientist has to really understand the broader goals of the company and be able to, as I said, ask the right questions of the data. You know, sometimes data scientists will complain that, you know, somebody from the business side will come and say, here's this data that we collected about people's, you know, shopping patterns over Christmas. Find me some insights. And you have to be much more specific and tailored to actually get something useful out of the data.
Well, wasn't a lot of this information about us previously discarded by corporations? Now they see value in it?
That's part of what is so interesting about this wave. I think, again, here's an example from the healthcare industry. So you've got devices, pacemakers, you know, that people have been using for, you know, 10 years, and these device companies have all this data about heart rates that they've never found any use for, and a lot of those companies, you know, still don't. Healthcare generally is many years behind, you know, finance and retail in dealing with technology and data, and so now you've got, you know, I've talked to the manager of the big data program at IBM, who said he's, you know, familiar with a pacemaker company that has 10 years worth of heart rate data. He's not doing anything with it. And the IBM guy said, you know, I was drooling over that data. So there's all right now that optimism is starting to be applied to that data. What can we learn from all that heart rate data that could potentially be used to, you know, help us understand retrospectively the kinds of heart rates that led up to, you know, a heart attack or some kind of adverse event? And then can we apply that in the future to other people's heart rates so that we can actually intervene before something happens? So one of the big hopes of big data is essentially predicting the future, predicting what is going to happen to a particular patient, predicting how a consumer is going to behave and what they're going to buy.
So is this really a matter of saving lives or selling things?
It's both.
Now, it has been used to help track side effects of drugs and discover outbreaks of diseases. So that definitely is a positive side to this. Is the healthcare industry putting a lot of money into big data analytics?
There are particular companies that are ahead of others. So, for example, systems that have been integrated for a while now, and by that I mean that it's the same company that is responsible for providing essentially the health insurance and the health care. So you've got big systems like Kaiser Permanente or the Veterans Administration. And so they've had interest for a long time in managing their patients' health care. And so what you've got now is companies in the private sector who are increasingly becoming interested in this, mainly as a result of healthcare reform. So now under Obama's healthcare reforms, hospitals are required to maintain the health care of their patients better. And so, for example, if you have a patient who comes in with congestive heart failure or pneumonia and they get discharged from the hospital, if they are readmitted within 30 days, then the hospital is on the hook for that. The government's not going to reimburse those costs. And so it's a huge incentive now for hospitals to better manage those people when they're discharged. And so that is partly why some of them are investing in big data to analyze the data that they have on patients from the past and putting together, you know, hundreds of different little data points from, you know, not just health condition, but is the person married? If a person is single, the data shows they're much more likely to be readmitted to the hospital because they don't have somebody helping them, you know, keep track of their medication or, you know, make sure that they're complying with doctor's orders. And so with big data, you can analyze part of that. That's part of where this unstructured data comes in. Sometimes, you know, the box has been checked that the person is married, and sometimes it's just been written in with a note. And so with big data, you can analyze all of that data, find out exactly who's married and who's single, and then target your resources at those particular patients that are most likely to be readmitted. So it's about, you know, triaging when people are outside the hospital and using your resources wisely.
April Dembowski is our guest on the Leonard Lopate Show. She's a tech correspondent at Financial Times. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. You spoke with Bill, is it Schmazo or Schmazo? The Chief Technology Officer for EMC. And he told you that he envisions a future where holiday photos posted on Facebook will become a gauge of a person's weight loss or gain over time. Who would that kind of data be of interest to?
Well, certainly to healthcare companies, and that's one of the advances of the technology. When we talk about unstructured data, not only are we talking about text, we're talking about photos and videos as well. And that's the one kind of data that has just simply exploded on social networks and YouTube as it's become a lot easier and cheaper to both, you know, collect that video and post it online. So, you know, what Bill Schmarzo is talking about, and he's really just envisioning what's possible with the technology that's available rather than reflecting, you know, something that healthcare companies are seriously considering. But, you know, you can with the points and the measurements on a photo, you can track the most minute changes. And this is part of, you know, the similar kind of technology that Facebook is using with face recognition to be able to recognize when a photo is uploaded who that is. And so, you know, the concern, of course, is that healthcare companies can be looking at this in one of two ways. They can look at that data, they can notice these kinds of subtle changes, and they can do an outreach program. Say, hey, looks like you're putting on a few pounds, might be time to come in and talk to one of our dietitians. Maybe we can prescribe you a kind of health tracking device that will help you, you know, track the kind of the calories that you're taking in. The flip side, of course, is the, you know, the health insurance companies that may see that and maybe want to deny coverage. But of course, again, with healthcare reforms, the interest for healthcare companies as well, they're not allowed to deny coverage for pre-existing conditions. So on some level, it's going to be of interest to them to also prescribe these kinds of management programs.
There's also, go ahead.
No, that's it.
There's also a political side to all of this. The Wall Street Journal notes that the Obama campaign website was even more assiduous than online retailers like Best Buy about dropping cookies on users' computers to gather information about their online habits. Since this tactic is likely to be used by campaigns in the future, is it going to be harder to get politicians to regulate big data collection, especially in the light of something else that I just read? Julia Angwin of the Wall Street Journal reported that under the new rules signed off by the Obama Justice Department, the National Counterterrorism Center can copy entire government databases, flight records, casino employee lists, the names of Americans hosting foreign exchange students, and many others. The agency has now authority to keep data about innocent U.S. citizens for up to 5 years and to analyze it for suspicious patterns of behavior. Previously, both were prohibited. So should we assume that the federal government is getting into the big data analytics in a big way?
I think we should. You mentioned politics, and political campaigns are definitely one of the early adopters of, you know, some of the earlier iterations of big data. You know, there are the GOP was the one that actually began collecting information about what people buy at the supermarket, what kinds of magazines they read, and drawing conclusions about what kinds of issues, you know, they're interested in. If you get education magazines at home and, you know, you buy products that are typically used for young children, then they can target you specifically with, you know, their education reform plan. So that's been in use for a long time, and the Obama campaign has certainly taken it to the next level with their most recent campaign. In terms of, you know, what they're allowed to do, historically, technology has been way ahead of the law and regulation, and that's something, you know, that we saw come up with the Petraeus scandal, that basically, you know, the law hasn't caught up with what law enforcement is allowed to search, what's considered a legal search and seizure. And the laws, you know, that govern electronic communications like email and social media were written, you know, before Facebook was even invented. So it's going to be, and lawmakers are, you know, looking at this right now and trying to figure out how to deal with it.
A report by the Obama administration last year noted that the impact of big data has the potential to be as profound as the development of the Internet itself. So has anybody proposed new legislation to protect us in certain areas?
Around big data, I don't think we've gotten that far. But certainly around the ability to track people online, the Do Not Track law is still being debated. These other laws around, you know, GPS tracking is still being debated. So it's very much up in the air.
I would assume that a lot of the stuff is predictable anyway. They can tell from looking at past records. You don't have to look at big data whether somebody has paid his bills on time or whether you live in a snowy area, whether you're likely to buy snowshoes this year. In fact, aren't most of our lives pretty predictable?
There is concern. There is, you know, concern that big data is becoming overhyped, that the kinds of conclusions that we can draw from data, as you said, could potentially be obvious. And so there was one shoe retailer that spent, you know, months and months and a lot of money on a data analysis that basically revealed people buy boots in the winter and sandals in the summer. So we have to be really cautious about exactly what we think we can get. Again, that kind of comes down to, you know, where the technology is at and how much further it can be refined. On the other hand, you do have companies that are drawing some very interesting conclusions from data that seems quite indirect. So in the financial industry, for example, you've got people who manage loans who are looking at social media data, who are basically believe that the way that you interact with your friends online shows a certain kind of, you know, commitment to community, and that extrapolated from that can be an indicator of how likely you are to repay a loan. Similarly, if a customer changes their cell phone number multiple times, perhaps that's another indicator of weak social ties, and that can be determined to be a bad credit risk. So you've got a lot of different, this is part of where, you know, big data is going, is drawing these conclusions from seemingly unrelated data points, and, you know, time will tell if those hypotheses turn out to be true.
Well, if the bank turns you down for that loan because you have changed your cell phone number a few times, can you find out can you learn whether that's the reason? I would be furious if I found out that it was. Because often you change your cell phone number for other reasons. You may move you've changed companies. Can you learn? Is there any way to get information on how much they've collected about you?
Right now, from a private company, no.
And I'm assuming in our brave new world, a child born today will go through his or her entire life with a huge trail of data about them that just exists to be exploited as they grow older.
Right. I mean, we have, you know, especially, you know, the cell phones that we get at younger and younger ages become almost in effect a tracking device.
Hmm. Well, thank you so much for talking with us and scaring the pants off of us.
Thanks for having me.
April Dembowski is a tech correspondent at Financial Times, and she participated in a series about big data that ran all this week. If you want to read it, you can get back issues of the Financial Times, or you can go to our show page at wnyc.org and find a link to it. Thank you again, April.
Thanks again.